Mr. Ball was talking in the sermonette about people we'll see in the kingdom. I can't think of any mean store clerks I've encountered. Not very many people who shook their fists at me on the parkway. But there's this woman in the post office. She's one of the postal workers there. I don't know, several years ago, we left for the Feast of Tabernacles, and before we left, we submitted our hold mail request so that mail delivery would be stopped while we were at the feast. We came back 10, 12 days later, and our mailbox was just stuffed. I mean, they had crammed 12 days worth of mail into this little box we have in the front of our house. It was spilling over onto the sidewalk, and I was really upset. What's the point of asking them to hold it if they don't? How can they not know how to not deliver mail? So I went down to the branch, and I wanted to talk to somebody and let them know what had happened. I tried to calm down. I wasn't really angry. Well, I was controlling my anger at that point. And so I went through the line, and I tried to explain to this lady what had happened and why I was bothered. And she couldn't have been any less interested in what I had experienced. And I tried to, I said, look, why don't I just give me a sign? I'll stick it out in front of my front yard. It'll say, we're on vacation. Anybody who wants to come into our house, here it is. With all this mail spilling. By the way, the newspaper man also, there were 12 newspapers piled up at the end of our driveway. I just stopped my subscription to the newspaper. I just cut them off. But you can't stop mail delivery. So she was very uninterested, so I asked to talk to the manager. And the manager came out, and she wasn't much more interested. But all I managed to do was to get this one postal clerk to not like me. And she's been there forever. Every time I go in, she's all friendly and happy and bouncy and talky to everybody, and I step up to the window, and she just goes, hmm. And I've tried my hardest to be friendly to her. But one of these days in the kingdom, we're going to have to sit down, have a cup of coffee, and work things out. I really hadn't thought of her in that way before, so thank you, Mr. Ball. Now I have another reason to look forward to the kingdom. He was also talking about the items we have in our lives that are important to us. The things that we have that are important. It wasn't the whole point of the message, but he touched on this. And I wanted to talk to you today as well about something that you have in your life, or certainly have available to you in your life, that is one of the most significant and important resources that you have that's available. This particular resource is essential to us at every point in life. And it is available to us all, as children, as teens, as adults. But if I were to ask you, what are your most significant blessings, this really may not even come to mind. Now, I know that kind of a list, if somebody asks you to try to consider what are the most important blessings that you have, it's kind of a frustrating thing. To try to analyze and to list, because no matter how careful you are, somebody's going to come along and one-up you by pointing out something that you overlooked that you should have been thankful for. You'd consider, of course, your calling to God's church and God's way of life, the understanding he's given to you, your family, the local congregation, your home, your job, your friends, your Facebook account, all the things that are really important to you. What I have in mind this afternoon is something that's mostly intangible, and yet it is essential. It's something that we all need. We all need to draw on so that we can continue to enjoy the rest of the blessings that God has given to us. But it's kind of ironic because as important as this is, it is something that we often don't appreciate at all. In fact, people have been known, even Christians, have been known to just outright reject this blessing. But if we do receive it properly, it will make our lives much better. What's more important even than receiving this resource or this blessing is what we do with it once we have it. It's something we can put to use in our lives. And it makes our lives much better when we do. The title of the sermon this afternoon is The Value of Discipline. Discipline is a difficult word. Discipline is something that by nature we view with suspicion. It's something that makes us feel defensive because it usually involves some kind of correction. Sometimes it stings. Often it's embarrassing. And you know, much of the time we don't even agree with it. God created us with an independent mind and an independent will. And we like it that way. We like things to be our way. And much of the time, that's just fine. In fact, probably most of the time, that's just fine. But one thing we don't really by nature want is anyone to, in effect, intrude on our privacy or to in some way judge us for the way we do something or something that we think or believe. But when we consider it, there are some things that we really don't know and can't know by ourselves. And we need to receive direction. We need to receive discipline. One of the most familiar scriptures in the Bible says that there's a way that seems right to a man, but the end thereof is the way of death. So there are some things in life we just can't figure out, and we need someone along the way to redirect us, to help us to find the way. Because what naturally seems right to us, logical, acceptable, can lead to destruction. In order to find the way that leads to life, we need someone to give us some direction. And that's where discipline comes into play. So, what is discipline? Why is it so valuable? And what's the best kind of discipline? We can answer some basic questions. And in doing so, maybe we can become a little more appreciative of what discipline really is, be more willing to receive it, and to benefit from that resource. Now, the book of Proverbs has a great deal to say about discipline. The book of Proverbs is filled with a lot of practical kinds of instruction, and many of the scriptures that we're going to look at today, will be from the book of Proverbs, clearly illustrating the value and the practical use of discipline. Now, our first thought is probably that discipline means punishment. And we're going to see that that can be a part of what discipline is. But there's more to it than that. A dictionary definition of the word discipline is strict training that corrects or strengthens mental ability or moral character. Discipline is strict training that corrects or strengthens mental ability or moral character. So what we'll emphasize as we begin to explore this topic is that effective and meaningful discipline begins with instruction. Discipline begins with instruction. Let's analyze that definition we just looked at, and we'll see within the definition why people often don't take well to discipline or to instruction. So let's look at it again. Let's kind of analyze it phrase by phrase. Discipline is strict training. Strict training. The word strict implies that there's a precise application, that there's a line between what's good or right and what's bad or wrong. It's strict. It's consistent. And it's precise. So strict training might include a great deal of instruction that holds us to a demanding standard. Again, that's something that kind of, our nature bristles at that, to someone holding us to, or that there is a demanding standard that we would be held to. Discipline is strict training that corrects. There you go. Strict training that corrects. Being corrected is something that, again, is offensive to us because we don't like to be wrong. We don't want others to think that they're better than us, that they know us, know better than us. Correction stings, it embarrasses, it frustrates. People don't like to be corrected. But discipline begins with instruction that is corrective. Strict training that corrects or strengthens. Well, to be strengthened may imply that, you know, you may not be entirely wrong, but still you can improve. You can be stronger. You can be more effective. You can do it better. Strict training that corrects or strengthens mental ability. Okay, so again, are you telling me that I don't know how to think? That I need to be shown how to have mental ability? Strict training that corrects or strengthens mental ability or moral character. All right, so that means that this instruction or this discipline is telling me that I have to change something about my behavior. My moral character is lacking. That I have to do something that I don't really want to do, or maybe not do something that I would like to do. So this instruction that we receive, that's defined in this way, strict training that corrects or strengthens mental ability or moral character, really falls in line with a word in the Bible, in the book of Proverbs, that's used frequently, the word rebuke. Instruction is often in the form of a rebuke, to straighten out something, to correct something, to point out that maybe we're headed in the wrong direction and we need to change. So this disciplined stuff really isn't very much fun, is it? To be given that kind of instruction. Let's look at some proverbs here that describe it, and we see the application of the concept here of discipline. Proverbs chapter 1, the first chapter in Proverbs. As I was working on this to prepare this message, it occurred to me that, you know, this does, it does apply to our young people, to our teens, to those who are learning about life and learning a great deal, again, being prepared to move on into your life. But it applies to everyone, not just to a young person. Discipline, training, instruction is something that is important to all of us and something that we all need to consider and to respond to in a very positive way. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel. And he introduces here the purpose of this book of Proverbs. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding. The word instruction that's used here in this first phrase, to know wisdom and instruction, the word instruction means warning, chastisement, or reproof. Instruction is not just a list of basic information and background or whatever. Instruction, in the way that it's intended here, means a warning, a chastisement, or reproof. In other words, this is speaking of corrective instruction. It is making a comparison of right and wrong, of learning the difference between right and wrong. Instructions are intended to help a person find his way, whether a younger person or an older person. Instruction points the way. It teaches wisdom. The word wisdom means skill at living. If we have wisdom, it means we know how to live. We know what to do. We know how to handle different circumstances. And this discipline, this instruction that we receive that is a warning or a chastisement or a reproof to correct the way that we are perhaps thinking or things that we're doing, is an essential part of teaching wisdom. And it's something that we all need to receive, because the way that's natural to us would lead to destruction. It's clear that a young person in particular needs this kind of direction and instruction so they can begin their lives by building a foundation of the right values and standards. So Solomon offers this as a starting point. Instruction to perceive the words of understanding. Verse 3, to receive the instruction of wisdom, as well as justice, judgment, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. Lacking this kind of instruction, a person will make their own decisions based on what they feel is correct or right. They'll choose their own standards of behavior, their own method of or way of treating others and of dealing with life and its challenges. We need to have discretion. We need to be prudent, thoughtful in our way that we think and the way that we conduct our lives. So this is a book of discipline. This is a book of corrective instruction, showing us the way that we need to go to live, the way that we need to conduct ourselves, because it's not something we're going to be able to successfully learn on our own. Turn to Proverbs chapter 6, verse 20. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 20. We'll see what the result can be when we receive the kind of instruction or discipline that Solomon is illustrating here in these early chapters of Proverbs. Chapter 6, verse 20. It says, "My son, keep your father's command and do not forsake the law of your mother." Now, as young people, as children and teens growing up in our families, our parents are there to give us commands and laws to live by. not always an easy thing to accept, not always an easy thing to agree with. We begin in those formative years of our lives, from adolescence on up, we start thinking for ourselves, and we start deciding what we like, what we want, the way we think things should be. And that's natural. As we grow into our teen years, we even kind of, to some extent, pull away from our families and or our parents, and we become ourselves. That's, again, the part of the maturing process. But here's a warning. Here is something that is important to understand and accept. Keep your parents' commands and laws. Verse 21, bind them continually upon your heart and tie them around your neck. Now, it's not tying around your neck like it's a leash or like it's something that a shackle that holds you back or in some way is harmful to you, but it means to wear them like an expensive and beautiful necklace, something that you're proud of. Understand the value of what it is that's being offered, what's being given to you. So if you do that, if you accept and build your life on those commands and those laws that your parents help you to understand, it says when you roam, they will lead you. When you're off on your own, even if it's just for the day at school or wherever you might be apart from your parents who have taught you these things, what they have taught you will lead you. It'll be the basis for your decisions and for who you are. When you sleep, they'll keep you. When you wake, they'll speak with you. For the commandment is a lamp and the law is a light. Reproofs of instruction are the way of life. So here's a very direct instruction, in particular to young people, but again, in principle to all of us, not to forsake the law and the command of the way that we've been taught to live, and to let it be the foundation of the way we behave and who we are. Those commands are the light or the lamp that will light the path of your life. And it says here, this instruction, these reproofs, this discipline is your life. It's your way of life. As we think about this, it's obvious as well that it emphasizes the need of parents to be teaching the commands and the laws, to be willing to take the time to work with our children, to teach them, to give them the instruction that they can benefit from. We'll come back to the book of Proverbs. Let's look at Psalm 94. Just back a book, the 94th Psalm, verse 12. Psalm 94, verse 12. This is a more general application beyond just for younger people. It includes all of us, younger people and adults. But look at the way it's phrased here in Psalm 94, beginning in verse 12. Blessed is the man whom you instruct, O Lord, and teach out of your law. God's law, the teaching, the instruction of God's law, is, in this broad sense of the word, is discipline. It's giving us the instruction that we need to help us to find our way. And discipline begins with corrective instruction. Blessed is the man whom you instruct, O Lord, and teach out of your law, that you may give him rest from the days of adversity, until the pit is dug for the wicked. For the Lord will not cast off his people, nor will he forsake his inheritance. God's law instructs and disciplines us. By it, we receive the discipline of instruction. We can receive it in many different forms. Receiving instruction from God can come to us from the study of His Word, can come to us from messages we hear, it can come to us from activities we participate in. All of the different youth activities are very Christian living oriented, teaching the value and the importance of building our lives on the discipline of God's law. Turn back to Proverbs 17, verse 10. We'll note one more thought on this first point. You know, there's an easy way to learn, and there's a hard way to learn. And it's up to us to choose. We can receive the instruction, or if we reject it, we'll have to learn that lesson down the road in a more difficult way. Proverbs chapter 17, verse 10 says, "Rebuke is more effective for a wise man than 100 blows to a fool." Rebuke, this corrective instruction that we can receive, this understanding of a strict standard of moral integrity that we can receive from the instruction in God's law, is something that is effective for a person who is willing and wise enough to receive it. One who is foolish can be beaten severely and not learn as much as one who is receptive to correction, receptive to discipline, and is willing to live according to what they receive. So the first point to be made about discipline is that it often comes in the form of instruction. Discipline begins with instruction, teaching us how to think and how to live. But it's only going to be effective for us if we're willing to set aside our pride, willing to accept and to learn. When we do that, then those instructions, that discipline can establish and guide us through the challenges of life. So instruction is a form of discipline. Let's move on to the second point. I have three. The second of the points I'm going to be discussing with you is probably what we initially think of, that we associate with the word discipline. That is that punishment is a form of discipline. Punishment is a form of discipline. Again, as we just pointed out, we can learn and accept from the corrective instruction that we receive. And in many cases, that's going to eliminate the need for punishment. But if that's the only way, then a loving parent and a loving God is willing to administer punishment as a form of discipline when it's helpful, when it's necessary. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 24. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 24. "He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly." A rod represents guidance and care. A rod is not always used to inflict corporal punishment. In Psalm 23, David said of God as his shepherd that he said, "Your rod and your staff comfort me." You see, the shepherd would use a rod, which was essentially a like a billy club type stick. maybe 18 inches long and fairly hefty, and he would use it to tap on the back of the sheep to guide it. It could be used, but it wasn't necessarily used to inflict any kind of punishment. In fact, more often it was used to protect the sheep from a predator. But the rod and the staff, the crooked, traditional crooked staff that you see associated with a shepherd, were used to guide and to direct the sheep. And only when it was necessary would it be used to inflict punishment. The primary purpose of a rod, as it's used in this context, is to provide the security of direction. But it can be used as well if punishment is necessary. Now, we have used this and similar verses to justify, in some cases, the spanking of young children. Corporal punishment is a parental choice. It's something that can have use and value if it's administered carefully and properly and for the right reason, and never in an abusive way. Correction, even in that form, when it is administered in that correct, loving, and proper way, gives a child security and is a way of helping them learn those valuable lessons that will be necessary for them. Obviously, as children grow older, there are more effective ways to deal with disciplinary situations. But a form of punishment is a part of discipline. And parents need to be willing to take the time and express to their children that kind of love to help them to prevent them from making more serious mistakes in the future. Look at Proverbs chapter 29, verse 15. Proverbs chapter 29, verse 15. Here it says that the rod and rebuke give wisdom. So the instruction and, in some cases, the need for a loving form of punishment are necessary and helpful in teaching our children how to live. When God administers any kind of intervention and punishment in our lives, he does so to teach us wisdom, to help us learn from a situation. In most cases, it would be something where there was an incorrect or improper form of behavior or in some way that needed to be corrected. And that correction from parent or from God himself as he works in our lives is intended to give us the benefit of wisdom. Notice verse 17. Correct your son and he will give you rest. It's important at times to take the time and make the effort, even though it is not always an easy thing to do, to provide the loving direction and correction, in some cases reinforced with a form of punishment, in order to teach the lesson that will save much grief down the road. He'll give you rest and he'll give delight to your soul. And as our children grow and mature and make those wise and good decisions because of what they've been taught, then it certainly does delight us as parents. Proverbs chapter 5, verse 21. Proverbs chapter 5, verse 21. interesting thing about making mistakes is that oftentimes they're self-punishing. The consequence of wrong behavior usually brings with it its own natural consequence of punishment. Proverbs chapter 5, verse 21, "The ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and God ponders all his paths. His own iniquities entrap the wicked man, and he is caught in the cords of his sin." Rejection of instruction or discipline or correction leads to mistakes. Mistakes in behavior, mistakes that are in some way often sinful. And with those mistakes, there come natural consequences. There are natural results. People become entrapped as a result of their own wrong choices, of not being willing to receive the instruction or the correction or the discipline that has been offered to them. I'm not going to have time or take the time to read very much of it, but let's go back to Hebrews chapter 12, because Hebrews 12, beginning in verse 5, starts with a quote from the book of Proverbs. Hebrews chapter 12, beginning in verse 5. And we look at this often in terms of the circumstances in our own lives where God at times will intervene to, in some way, correct us, to chastise us, yes, even punish, because of wrong choices that we have made. Beginning in verse 5 of Hebrews 12, says, "You've forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as sons." And this is a quote from Proverbs chapter 3, verses 11 and 12. "My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens, and he scourges every son whom he receives." There are times when God will chasten us. And it's for our good, to teach us wisdom and to teach us the lessons of life that will benefit us, so we can learn from the mistakes that we've made. The word that's translated chasten here in the Greek has two applications. It means to provide instruction with the intent of forming proper habits. That's what we've talked about already. To chasten means to provide instruction, to teach us, to train us. The second application of the word chasten means to punish for the purpose of improving behavior. If you read on through the next few verses, you'll see that this punishment that God may inflict is for the good of those who receive it. It is God dealing with us, it says in verse 7, as his sons. Verse 9 in this chapter, God compares his approach to punishment to that of our human parents. You know, our parents would never punish unless there was a reason and an explanation. When God works in our lives, it is for our understanding, so that we can benefit from his work for us and within us. Now, this idea of God chastening us can be kind of frightening. We shouldn't be paranoid, thinking that every time something unpleasant happens, that God is specifically reaching down to punish you. That would be an extreme, and it would not be the case. We know that God allows various challenges and trials in our lives so that we can prove our faith in him. We know that we live in a world that is filled with temptation and difficulties and challenges to us. Life is simply difficult at times. But most importantly, remember what we saw back in Proverbs chapter 5. Many of the difficulties that we experience is the result, the natural consequence of the mistakes that we've made. Sin, again, is self-punishing. So whenever we have a difficulty, again, don't be thinking that, well, God somehow is angry at me and he's afflicting me and punishing me. The most of the experiences and difficulties we have in our lives, or at least many of them, are the natural consequence of our own mistakes. And God uses those to help us to come to repentance and to recover from the mistakes that we've made. As Paul says in Galatians 6, we reap what we sow. If we use poor judgment or make bad decisions, then we will suffer the consequence. But we can learn from that, as it says here again in Hebrews. It says, no chastening in verse 11 seems to be joyful for the present, but is painful. Nevertheless, afterward it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who are trained by it. To those who learn the lesson and avoid repeating it. So this is a very important part of discipline. Sometimes punishment is necessary. And when it is administered carefully and thoughtfully, it has a very positive effect. But you know, those who receive it must accept it. That's what it says here, we just read in verse 11. It yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who are trained by it. If we learn the lesson, then the experience we have of discipline is very helpful and meaningful and positive for us. Now, what we've talked about so far is instruction that is given to us and punishment that may sometimes be administered in our lives. We've talked about discipline in the sense that it is something that is done for us and with us and to us by someone else. But the whole point of instruction and punishment, when that is necessary, is to teach us self-discipline. The most important kind of discipline is self-discipline. As parents, that's our goal in working with our children. As God is working with us all, that's His goal and purpose as well. To teach us to have the wisdom and the strength to make right decisions in our lives. To discipline or maintain self-discipline or self-control. Here's how the dictionary defines self-discipline. Self-discipline is the ability to control one's feelings and overcome one's weaknesses. The ability to control our feelings and overcome our weaknesses. It goes on to say it's the ability to pursue what one thinks is right despite temptations. The ability to control what is right despite temptations. Self-discipline is really the key to our life. The key to the way we live, the way that we apply what we've been instructed and what we've learned. Proverbs chapter 1 again. Proverbs the first chapter, verse 8. Similar to what we read little earlier, but let's look at it here. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8. It says, "My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head, and chains," or like a beautiful, again, beautiful necklace or jewelry around your neck. And here's the lesson that is learned by those who hear the instruction and remember the law and are and wear it in a sense and in a prideful way, building their lives upon it. Verse 10, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent." Based on what we have learned, based on what we've been taught, based on the direction we've been given, and the correction we've received in the past, the whole point is to have the good sense and the strength that we need to resist when we are enticed or tempted. There won't always be somebody standing next to us telling us what we should do, telling us what we should think, telling us how we should handle this particular situation. We build our lives on the instruction that we've been given, and then we have the strength to deal with the enticements of life, the temptations. It happens all the time. We're tempted by what other people are doing, what other people think, what other people want us to be involved in. We're tempted by the circumstances that we're in to compromise what is right, to take an easier way. We're tempted by our own desires. It says in the book of James, James chapter 1, that when we sin, it's because we're enticed by our own desires, our own nature, the things that we would naturally prefer that are contrary to God's law. And of course, we know we live in a world where Satan has made every effort to entice and to seduce in the wrong, and to deceive and lead in the wrong direction. Self-discipline is that ability to correct or to apply what we've learned so that we can continue in the right way, even at those times when it might be more tempting to take an easier way or what looks like a more enjoyable way. One of the passages I often remind or look at when I'm thinking with or maybe working with a young person working toward baptism or at other stages, it's 2 Timothy chapter 3. 2 Timothy chapter 3. Here's something for all of us to build on, and in particular, an encouragement to our younger members in our church. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 14. Says, "You must continue in the things which you have learned and been assured of, knowing from whom you learned them, and that from childhood you have known the Holy Scriptures." Paul here is encouraging Timothy, reminding all of us to continue in what we have learned. And we have, in our congregations, some who have had that special benefit of having been taught from God's Word from childhood. And remember those from whom you've learned, taught by faithful, sincere parents, grandparents who want that next generation to have the understanding they need, to have the self-discipline they need to continue in what they have learned. From childhood, you've known the Holy Scriptures. To continue in them requires self-discipline. It requires a personal understanding and commitment to insist of ourselves that we make the right decisions. One of the things I'm most impressed by in our teen speech club is how the teens approach, whether it's table topics or speeches, so often from a Christian living perspective and applying principles of God's law to their view of life. It tells me that they're being taught by their families, by their parents, in their homes. They're learning at the teens' camps and other activities that they participate in, learning the principles of God's law and seeing how they apply in the personal choices that they make, and remembering that they, from childhood, have learned to base their lives on God's instruction. And now to continue in it, to exercise that self-discipline so that they will be able to continue in that way. One more verse in Proverbs, chapter 2. Proverbs, the second chapter. Now, those of you who have been keeping up with the daily scripture writing challenge, we've written out these first two chapters of Proverbs in the in those little piece at a time in those daily assignments to as we write out the scriptures. Proverbs, the first couple of chapters, really is very basic understanding that is encouraging and meaningful to us all. It's addressed specifically to, it says, my son, here in chapter 2, verse 1, to the young, but it applies in every sense to all of us. Proverbs chapter 2, verse 1, I want you to notice the verbs here. We're talking about self-discipline. Self-discipline requires us making choices and taking action. Notice the verbs that are emphasized here in these first few verses. My son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands, so that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding, if you cry out for discernment, lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek her as silver and search for her as hidden treasure. See, these are all actions. These are things that we do. These are things that require commitment and personal self-discipline to take this to heart and to apply the things that we've learned, the things that we've been taught. To receive my words means to accept them and to carry them with you. To treasure his commands means to hoard or to preserve or to protect or to gather the teachings that you receive. To incline your ear means to listen carefully. To cry out for discernment means to call for it, to invite it, to show desire for it. To lift up your voice, to seek, meaning to invite and to search for. These are the actions of self-discipline, of reaching out for and applying and continuing to grow in what we have learned, what we've been offered. And notice what happens. Then you will understand the fear of the Lord. Then you'll understand why we honor and worship God. He'll give us wisdom, it says in verse 6, if we seek it and desire it, as is described here. All matters of self-discipline. In 1 Corinthians 9, Paul talks about the effort that he made to keep himself under control. He said he disciplined his body to keep it under control, to bring it under subjection, to make it ready to receive and to continue in the path that we're on. Paul describes there the frame of mind of one who is self-disciplined. So this third point has to do with the importance of self-discipline. There won't always be somebody there telling us what to do. God is looking for us with the independent, again, mind and will that He's given to us, looking for us to choose His way and to have the self-discipline to continue in it, the personal conviction and determination to maintain control, to live by godly standards, especially in those times when we're tempted to choose an easier or another way. Self-discipline is a key. Let's conclude by looking at one more proverb, chapter 19, verse 20. Proverbs 19, verse 20. Proverbs 19, verse 20 says, "Listen to counsel, receive instruction, that you may be wise in your latter days." If we listen, if we receive, if we learn from what we're taught, the experiences that we have, then in our latter days we'll have the wisdom, the strength, the ability, the self-discipline that we need to continue, that need to be a successful part of God's way and the calling He's given to us. Discipline is a very important and valuable resource in our lives. It includes instruction. It includes appropriate punishment at times. And it teaches us the strength of self-discipline. That discipline that we receive and that we exercise is the foundation for what is to be our life and what we're able to accomplish and the wisdom that we will develop. Discipline is certainly one of the most important and valuable resources and blessings that we have.